Welcome to the Construction User 2.0 from the Association of Union Constructors. In this podcast, we explore the latest labor trends, industry insights, and important issues in the world of construction. Join us for conversations with industry leaders, subject matter experts, and innovative visionaries as we discuss how we are building the world of tomorrow. Our guest today is Executive Director of Trades Futures, a nonprofit corporation organized for the purpose of developing, promoting, and improving apprenticeship readiness programs, or ARPs. Bringing with her a diverse background of experiences, including serving as NAB2's ARP coordinator, teaching social studies and Spanish in the Milwaukee school system, and even working as a pastry cook in DC before joining NAB2. Her wealth of real-world experience lends itself well to her current role, setting up the next generation of the American labor force. We are thrilled to be joined today by Nicole Schwartz.
So, Nicole, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm pretty well. Summer is heating up here in DC, but that's fine by me. This is my favorite part of the year.
Really?
It's a little old, circa August, but right now it's feeling pretty good.
I love it. I love it. So, as I don't know if you've listened to our show before, but I always try to open with a kind of fun, nonsensical question. So, what is the last song you got stuck in your head?
It happened yesterday. I was talking with my husband. I can't think of the name of the song, but now it's going to come back to me and never leave me again.
Yeah, that happens. It's a side effect of the question, really.
It is. It is. Yes. Yes.
So are we talking like pop, children's music? What kind of genre?
It was a pop song. It was related to something that had happened in the news. So, you know, I think at some point during our interview today, it'll pop back into my head.
Hey, blurt it out. No matter where we are, no matter how serious what we're talking about, just blurt out, oh, it was Taylor Swift or whatever.
Like, okay. We'll do.
So cool. Now, some of our listeners will know, some of ours won't. But before we get just going, tell me about Trades Futures. What is Trades Futures at the basic level?
Sure. Trades Futures is a new-ish nonprofit organization set up by North America's building trades unions and their contractor and industry partners to kind of take on the mission of diversifying the construction industry through registered apprenticeship and connecting participants or potential participants through our apprenticeship readiness programs. We go a lot farther than that than just our apprenticeship readiness programs. We kind of take on anything that helps diversify the pipeline of candidates into the industry. So, for instance, we have a childcare pilot in New York City and in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we also have HBCU, Historically Black Colleges and Universities, internship and scholarship initiatives in Georgia and Alabama. And we actually have two interns in our office this summer, Talil and Josh. Josh is from Talladega College, and Talil is from Alabama A&M.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. When I first kind of started doing events and PR and things, one of my first clients was the CBTU, the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists.
Nice.
And they were so great to work with and so passionate and driven, and they are great. No, so I've worked with some of those colleges and stuff for a lot of this stuff, and that's great.
Yeah.
Speaking of diverse backgrounds, though, you have quite the interesting background. Walk me through this. So you were, from what I understand, you were a Spanish teacher,
mm-hmm.
yep. and then a pastry chef,
mm-hmm.
and now you're here.
Yes.
Mind you tell me a story? How did that happen?
Sure. Yeah, no problem. I taught in Milwaukee Public Schools from January 2008 to, I guess, the end of the 2014-2015 school year, so June 2015. And then I moved here with my husband to Washington, D.C. In my time in Milwaukee Public Schools, I was a Spanish teacher at the middle school and high school level, but I also taught social studies, high school social studies, everything from U.S. history, politics, economics, restorative practices, Latin American history. I taught a lot of different courses during my time. And then I moved here. I didn't feel super connected to the community, as often happens when you move to a new city. Yeah. And I didn't really feel that I was fully equipped to kind of dive back into the role of being a teacher in the community. So I decided to kind of use it as an opportunity to pivot and do something else that I was interested in. And I've always been interested in baking, you know, ever since I was very young with my family members cooking for our family, cooking for big events. So I decided to take the plunge. I applied for a pastry cook job. Well, I applied for several. I got one of them, and I spent a couple of years there as a pastry cook and then a kitchen manager and eventually a commissary manager. And I learned a ton about where the rubber hits the road for workforce development, for what people leave their K through 12 education with. Sometimes, you know, having passed through a four-year degree institution or a community college and then find their way to the workforce. There was one more stop on my journey before I got here to Trades Futures, and I spent a year working at an urban farm also here in DC, which provided me with an entirely different perspective. You know, I worked, it was interesting because I worked with a lot of the same companies that I purchased from in the bakery. I was now supplying them with items from the urban farm that I worked on. But again, a ton of some real perspective again on what it takes to run a business. And also, you know, again, where the rubber hits the road for people when they hit the workforce. So eventually I ended my way back here. You know, I was a member of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association in Milwaukee. And I missed the labor movement. I missed the connection to my brothers and sisters and siblings, and wanted to get back to that because I always have kind of felt that that was always at the heart and the base of what we did, or what I did as a teacher, not only for my community, but also for all of the teachers and the other staff that I worked with.
So then you heard about the job from NAB too? How did it get?
Yeah. So great question. I started as the apprenticeship readiness coordinator for NAB too in 2019. We had roughly 180 apprenticeship readiness programs at that point in time. Dr. Tom Krieger was kind of leading the charge there with apprenticeship readiness programs. You know, pandemic hit. We, you know, make our way through a couple of years of the pandemic. But as we started to make our way through that, you know, I think it became clear that to really do what we came to do here, or, you know, what NAB2 has come to do and their contractor and industry partners, the apprenticeship readiness programs, the multi-craft core curriculum and everything that it kind of, you know, embodies needed its own institution to move forward, to actually take on new initiatives like the child care pilot. So, you know, we started the organization in late 2022, kind of working on the child care pilot to get started, but then tech eventually took over the administration of the apprenticeship readiness programs from NAB2 in early 2023.
That's awesome. I've always really truly believed it's true growth, true innovation, true recruitment, true breaking down barriers. It takes a diverse background, because when you have 10 people that have been doing the same thing for the same 10 years, they all kind of think alike. But what's great about your particular background is you don't even have to squint very hard to go, you know, from teacher to, you know, working in the DC, in DC as a pastry cook, and then to the urban farm. It is all workforce development. Even though it might feel or appear at first glance to be all, it's diversified, but there's lots of great information from lots of different communities and locations, lots of different perspectives, and they're all valid.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the things that I really took in, and this is very specific to the work that I do now, especially in the pastry kitchen, so much of what we do is math. You know, we'd have a whole batch, you know, I'd have a prep list on the board every day. We're going to make this, this, and this. We're going to do a whole batch of this, a quarter batch of that, an eighth batch of this. And how do you get those measurements from the whole batch down to the quarter batch to the eighth batch? And how do you do that math? How do you get to the other side of that? We all did everything in weights, you know, not in volume.
Sure.
Because it's a large pastry kitchen. So the number of people who came through the kitchen who didn't always understand the math that we needed to use, that I think that was one of the first connections that I was able to make here when I started as apprenticeship readiness coordinator. You know, that people have some of these skills, but what they've learned in school doesn't necessarily translate to them when they get to the workforce. And when they're, you know, when they're looking at a board that says, I need an eighth of a batch of frosting. Like, what's an eighth of a batch of frosting? You know, that's not listed here. It's something you have to figure out on your own. So you know, I learned a ton about really trying to connect people with what they're really strong at and interested in doing. And when you can kind of do that in a, whether it be your apprenticeship program or, you know, your work site, you're going to get so much more out of everybody when you're tapping into their potential and who it is that they want to be. And, you know, I think that's what we do in our apprenticeship readiness programs.
Sounds like it. So there's, you know, we've talked to, you know, Martin Helms from Helms to Hard Hats, and we've talked to a bunch of the different apprenticeship programs themselves. That what pools are you fishing in? What you have all these different, there's lots of, you know, we have the veterans and we have this, we have the high schools have different programs. Lots of the local Leos have their, you know, going to high schools or middle schools. Trades Futures, where are you guys focusing on? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first and foremost, I'll say that, you know, we want to throw out the widest possible net to catch everyone in every single pool. You know, I think that's part of what we do. You know, a lot of throughout the years of four-year education in high school, for instance, you know, the four-year college degree has kind of taken over as the narrative of what someone should achieve after they graduate from high school. And so there's just generations of people, maybe not generations, but decades of people who've graduated from high school who have no knowledge of what the construction industry can offer to them and how registered apprenticeship works. So when we think about that wide net, that doesn't just mean the people who are in high school now. It means, you know, young people in middle school. It means adults who've recently graduated from high school, adults who've completed community college, adults who are just as impacted, whether that be after they have left a facility or while they are still inside a facility. So, you know, we really want to cast the largest net possible. And when we kind of think through our programs, you know, I kind of set them up into kind of two separate lanes. You've got like a slow drip hose, and then you have a fire hose. Your fire hose of programs, those are going to be the adults that are going to have access to job opportunities right now. Those are the people that we really want to make sure take an apprenticeship readiness program, have what they need to be successful, and are connected to the RA program afterwards. Then we have this other batch kind of over here of the slow drip. That's going to be your middle school students. That's going to be your high school students. That's going to be people who, you know, young people who are thinking through what their future will look like. And at many times, I think we find with young people, they decide what they can't do before they decide what they can do.
Sure.
We have to get in front of them before they decide that they can't do this work or that construction isn't for them or any of those types of lines of thinking that I think can happen to young people as they, you know, turn 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. And then, you know, I think we also, a slow drip for us too, are the programs that we have inside correctional facilities. For instance, we have a partnership with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitations where the MC3 is offered or will be offered in all 33 state institutions. And the idea is really to get what the opportunity in registered apprenticeship and construction is really all about, get them the skills that they would need. And hopefully, if this, you know, rings true to them, they have the resources that they need so that when time comes, they know where to go, they know who to talk to, they know what to bring, and they know what they need to be successful to get into registered apprenticeship. So, you know, and again, may not be that everyone who enters that program while they are inside is interested, but we want to make sure that they have the opportunity to make that decision for themselves. And that's really what the apprenticeship readiness program is all about, is making sure that people have access to the information and know what to do with it.
The prison thing, that's really cool. I hadn't thought of that, of doing the you know, that seems like a cool program. So there's been a lot of talk, just the worker shortage, or there's no apprenticeship. Is there any concern about, you know, is there a worker shortage? I know there are people that have lots of different opinions on that. Are we going to get too many apprentices in and then set them up where there's not enough work for them? Can you talk about the kind of the workforce development and job flow on the other side of the program?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think this is one of the things that we really emphasize to programs that are getting started, is the close connection to the Building Trades Council in their area. And that's kind of why, you know, we administer the programs nationwide, but the local administrators are the building and construction trade programs, because they're going to be, or the building and construction trades councils, because they're going to be the ones to help the program to make the connections to all of the apprenticeship programs, the JATCs in their local area, and also really help determine expectations for the short and the long term about what the opportunities will look like. You know, we're going to have work for 7 or 8 years. So you're going to try to build a program that can fill a pipeline for 7 or 8 years. If that's not the case, then you're not going to try to build that type of program.
Sure.
So that local connection to what's happening is essential for success of the programs. And, you know, what happens in California is not going to be what happens in Michigan, what happens in Ohio, right. New York, Florida. So if you were to go to each one of those places right now, they would probably have just a little bit of a different narrative to tell you, because all of the projects are happening at different times. You know, nothing is really uniform in this particular industry in that way. So, you know, that's one, you know, I kind of do get this question sometimes, and I have to split it up like that, because what happens in one place isn't happening in the other.
Well, and the pipeline health, or the funnel health, as we call it in comms, it doesn't matter if we catch lots of people, if there's nowhere to go, a funnel with a block at the end's a cup, really awkwardly shaped cup. You know, you have to keep the pipeline moving. So yeah, it's an interesting problem. You want to get as many people in, because the trades need, but linking it up to the building trades, the BCTCs is, you know, critical.
Yeah. And, you know, again, setting expectations. If you know that, you know, whether it be whatever JATC might have a long waiting list, you're not going to advertise that to your apprenticeship readiness programs as the number one choice to enter at this moment in time. You know, it's a part about setting expectations, like saying these crafts in this area are going to have the best outlook for the next 5 to 10 years, and really providing that information to participants so they can think through what's best for them. Some people are insistent and they will wait. And, you know, that's okay. That's fine. Sure. For a lot of those people, we want them in the trades. If they're going to wait until their time comes and they know this is the work for them, then that's fine. But we just have to make sure that those expectations are clear to participants too, as they move through the program, and to set them up for the career that's going to be best for them.
Great partners make a difference in any industry, but ours are the best. So let's take a moment for the Milwaukee Minute.
Milwaukee Tool is dedicated to providing a full range of trade-focused solutions that increase confidence and productivity on the job site. One example of that commitment is OneKey, our connectivity platform that puts job site management into your hands, allowing you to track what matters through the industry's largest Bluetooth tracking community. This purpose-built tracking hardware and software gives you the ability to customize, track, and manage your tool inventory, fundamentally changing the way you interact with your tools. Together, the OneKey app and the IoT-connected power tools deliver superior task-specific power, precision, quality, and repeatability to help you and your crew work smarter. The free app grows with your business, addressing inventory pain points, increasing productivity, and decreasing downtime. Learn more about the OneKey platform at onekey.milwaukeetool.com.
So you mentioned it briefly at the beginning, and then I did some reading about it as well, about, you know, you stood up the childcare programs. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me a little bit about that journey? And then I know I already have a follow-up, but let's establish that baseline of the childcare programs. How did that go?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll first give a huge shout out to NAPTU's Tradeswomen Committee, because that's kind of where the idea for this all started, much before Trades Futures really got the launch. It was kind of serendipitous that the discussions about the childcare pilot and Trades Futures launch kind of just happened all at the same time, that we could be the home to really take what the Tradeswomen Committee had set up and put it into action. So we have pilots in two cities, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and New York City, New York. They are, you know, focused on providing support to families, both apprentices and journey workers, who need help securing childcare. And, you know, I think we have unique issues that we face here in the construction industry, and given the number of days that people work a week, the number of hours, the start time, the end time, those can all be barriers to entry for women in particular. And that was kind of, you know, the whole impetus behind the Tradeswomen Committee taking interest in the childcare pilot, but also families. We have a number of dual trade families that have been enrolled in the pilot in Milwaukee in particular. And dual trade families, you know, you're going to have those same problems, but it's, you know, partner and partner are going to have 10-hour days with different shift start times and maybe working 6 days a week. So how do you make that happen for families? And I think we've discovered so much about childcare and how childcare is just so, it's so intensely personal. You know, I think that's part of it. You know, what is going to work for this family and this family are not going to be the same thing. Yeah. So trying to find ways to support people in those different lanes that they might exist in has been a lot of what we've focused on doing. So, you know, we provide payments to the childcare facility of the choice of the pilot participant, whether that be, you know, someplace that they've gone for a long time, whether that be somebody who has, you know, a child care center in their house, whether it be a family member. You know, we have ways to support families as they are trying to weave this all together. And, you know, it's been interesting in learning, because in some places, you know, it's not the hours that a child is in a child care facility too can be also an issue that you have to try to manage. You know, some places you can't have a child in a childcare facility for 10 hours a day. So how do you manage that as a single parent, as a family? And, you know, I think the financial assistance provided through the pilot project has really made a difference for people. And, you know, I think it's really valuable, because we're focusing on issues specific to the construction industry, but that also bleed out much farther to non-traditional industries, period. You know, it's not, there's only a certain segment of society that works 9 to 5, and there's a lot of other people who are trying to put it together outside of those hours. So I think that our findings here have been invaluable, both to the construction industry, but also to anyone out there who's really trying to, you know, get their community to full employment. And I say that because if someone can't access childcare, or if it's too expensive, you know, how can they actually get, you know, I think that's such a key piece of this puzzle, is that it's, if we really want to think about what our workforce looks like, we need to think more in depth about what kind of care people are able to secure for their family members.
Absolutely. You know, there's only so many people that can work banker's hours. Mm-hmm. There's only so many people that can be 100% telework, and it's not a big deal. But there's only especially in this new world, especially with the way things are working now, everyone's situation is so unique to them. Mm-hmm. And even if two coworkers on the same job site, their situation is so unique to them. One's driving 30 miles, one's driving 90 miles. So one's workday is 3 hours longer than the others, or infinite other small things that can change, and being able to be accommodating to that to build the nation, I think is going to be a big part of it.
Oh, I think it has to be a part of it. You know, I mean, it just has to be a part of the conversation. And, you know, we've always kind of known this, and for our apprenticeship readiness programs, I've always identified childcare as a barrier to entry for women, even into the apprenticeship readiness programs. So we know that this has been something that really needs attention. And, you know, I'm just so pleased to be working on the project. And we've got great partners in New York and in Milwaukee who are, and I've seen some numbers, you know, I've seen how families have been able to save for, you know, for their families. And I think sometimes we think about just getting by, but so much of our life should be about more than just getting by and being able to enjoy our lives. So, you know, if apprentices and journey workers are able to save money to send their kids to camp, like that is a gold star win, because that's going to keep that family together. It's going to provide an educational experience for children that's really valuable. So I think that we've just seen so much of the other positive benefits of this type of program to families.
And obviously, this is a pilot program in New York, a pilot program in Milwaukee. We have 48 other states and many other cities and things. So this is by no means done. But what's the next windmill that we have to tilt at? We have childcare that's a big barrier to entry. What are some of the other big barriers that we all need to be aware of and working on fixing?
You know, transportation is a huge one.
Okay.
And it's, you know, that affects, you know, rural, urban, suburban in a very different way, but kind of similar no matter what. You know, if you're if you live in New York City and you live in the Bronx, but you're, you know, you've got to get to a job site in a different borough and your child is in a different borough and you have to take public transportation, you know, like if you have to drop your child off at a childcare center, you got to get to your job site. So, you know, it's not always just A to B transportation. It can be very complicated. And somebody brought this up to me the other day, and I thought it was just kind of the ideal way to think through it. You know, somebody said, well, why don't people just call Ubers to get to work? And someone was like, well, what if they're working on a highway project? Are you just going to have someone drop them off in the median on like I-95 to go to work in the morning? Like, that's not, you know, that's not actually super convenient or safe or easy or ideal for anyone.
Yeah. And Uber makes you put in an address. You're like, yes. Mile marker 43. They're going to be like, no.
No.
Like, yeah. Sometimes there isn't an address. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think it is something that we need to, that needs to be tackled. It's a big one. We've got people kind of across the country thinking through different avenues to kind of solve the problem, whether it be, you know, starting like a real network of apprentices or apprenticeship readiness programs that are like carpooling together. Like, these are the people that I went through, and this is my larger phone tree to try to make sure that everybody has somebody that they can reach out to if they run into, you know, some type of issue with transportation. There's organizations that try to get people vehicles. So, you know, in their first year of apprenticeship, they actually have the vehicle. It may not be, you know, the big red truck that they're looking for, but it'll get them from point A to point B. And it's one of the things that we do need to tackle. You know, it's not. And you know, and the other thing is, too, is if you're not going to the same job site every month, every year, every week. So that's not something that's always going to be set in stone, you know, that you can go to, you know, like I do. I come to work in the same building every day. That's not going to be, that's not realistic for people who work in the craft. So transportation is a big one that we need to tackle.
I again, the thing that I just hadn't thought of. And so that's actually the basis of my next question is, you know, on both this podcast within Talk, the Association of Union Constructors, we kind of have three different audiences. We have, you know, our owners, we have the labor, and we also have the management. And all three groups have deeply personal relationships with every one of these issues, the workers, the safety, the hours, the speed, the budget. It's like that recipe you were talking about at the beginning, and not everyone comes into it understanding how to calculate the eighth of a batch of icing. You're coming at it with, you're very intelligent. You have a great background, sometimes in education. You have a deep understanding of what your banking sheet, what your spreadsheet looks like, but you don't always have a great understanding of the perspectives, needs of every aspect. So this next question is super loaded, and I like to say that up front. So the booby trap is over here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We have three different audiences. We have what are things we as an industry, bringing it all together? You know, a lot of times you said earlier as well, sometimes we have to split it. We have to split things up. But what are things that we all could be doing? I mean, it's easy to say, let's all have empathy and understand everyone's trying. Okay. But that goes both ways. Other people need the job site to be fully staffed at 6 a.m. every day, and they can't care about your problems, and they can't care about your transportation. What can we do as an industry, from the owners that need the project done to the contractors that are employing the labor to the labor and the ARPs, what can we all do that helps everyone?
You know, I think, and this is going to be oversimplified, so you passed me a loaded question.
I did.
Back a simple answer. But, you know, part of it is really taking actual stock of where you're at. Because if you don't have actual stock of where you're at, how are you going to find out where you're going to go? So if you're thinking, for instance, about how many women are working on your job site, do you know how many women are working on your job site? If you don't know, how are you going to get more women onto the job site? How can you reach 20% women in the construction industry if you don't know where you're at right now? How can you provide childcare options for families if you don't know what the families that are working on your job sites need? And I think that that's, you know, the one lesson that I would want to take for this particular question, and using the childcare pilot as an example, you know, I think it's what people needed in Milwaukee was different than what people needed in New York. But finding out what they needed is half the battle in order to get there. And knowing that, you know, And I think this was this is one of my favorite parts about connecting our apprenticeship readiness programs across the country is that, you know, maybe somebody has run into a roadblock here in state X, but somebody over here in state Y has figured out a way to get around it. The state laws may be a little bit different, but looking at what they've done as compared to where you're at can help you get to where you want to go. So it is a simplified answer, but it's really important to take stock of where you're at and what you need out of the situation. You know, what if you're really trying to get towards finishing a project, what is it that you need to get there? Is it this many people working on the site? Well, how do you get to that many people? And right. What is it that they need to give you what you need? And I think figuring out how these connections right. are all made, it does seem super simple, but I think you have to break it down to those terms if we're really going to build something that works for all three entities.
It is simple, but I will say I've seen throughout my career, I've seen a lot of times where people are like, the car is broken, but you can't lift the hood. If you lift the hood, it'll show. So the car is broken. Make the sound stop. I really need the car working, but you cannot.
Right.
You're like, but how am I supposed to fix it? That's a you problem. Don't. So step one being stop and research, stop and look around, take a look at what's going on. Don't just assume, you know. Take a look.
We don't know what happens when we do that. And I think, you know, and one point that I'll make there is that, you know, we had a lot of expectations and assumptions pre-pandemic. And for some of those, we need to take a look at them post-pandemic because things have changed. And
assumptions change all the time. Yeah. Or, I'm sorry. Assumptions often stay the same. The facts change all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love
and
it.
I think, you know, I think that's. That to me is like I said, and then maybe it seems too simple. And that's why people sometimes skip over that step because they think they know the answer, but you don't always know the answer.
I love it. So I don't want to keep you all too long. Two last questions. One, did you remember the earworm? It's very important to me. I'm so curious.
I don't remember the earworm, but I want to say that. So this will be your fact that will, you know, age me a little bit, but also maybe make me some friends. I've always been a big Donald Sutherland fan because he was in the movie Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes, he was. So, I loved that movie. Not the show. The show was fine. I loved that movie.
I am a fan of both the show and the movie, but the movie to me is like top 10 movies of all time. So in my mind, I'm feeling it's going back to that, to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie, that there is an earworm from that.
And of course, Donald Sutherland just passed. So yes. I can get that. And then the last back on topic question is just kind of the conclusionary question. What's next? What's the future? What are we doing next?
You know, we want to really, I think one thing that's been really interesting about working over the last 5 years with our apprenticeship readiness programs is watching our strongest programs pivot as quickly as they have and finding ways to help support candidates as they move through, you know, their apprenticeship readiness programs into a registered apprenticeship. So we have a lot of programs who are finding ways to offer additional certifications to graduates as they move through the program so that, you know, when they show up for their apprenticeship, they don't just have an MC3 certification, OSHA 10, and first aid. They might have, you know, scaffolding. They might have flagger certification. They might have some other type of certification that really assists them. And then I think the thing that I'm most excited about is that we've translated the MC3 into Spanish. And that will be released within the next month or so. It's been the last year working to get that set up. So I'm very excited about being able to provide curricular supports to participants. You know, I think I am always going to be a public school teacher at heart. So for me to think through how we can support and build programs that, you know, provide participants with what it is that they need to make their own success when they enter into a registered apprenticeship. What is it that they need to feel confident in their work? What is it that they need to feel confident in working with, you know, the members of their own craft and other crafts on site? You know, what is it that they need to be successful? And that's really what excites me the most about moving forward is working with our programs, working with the industry, finding what people need and finding ways to get it there.
Wonderful. Nicole, thank you so much for your time and the conversation. It's been great, and looking forward to hearing great things about Trades Futures in the future.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You've just listened to the Construction User 2.0 podcast from the Association of Union Constructors. Don't forget to subscribe to get all future episodes of what is going on and what is current in the union construction and maintenance industry.